Could you think of anything that you'd rather be doing to make a living than this?
No, absolutely not. I don't work. I just have fun. I help people. Everybody in business has some sort of problem, some sort of challenge to keep them awake at night where they say, if only I could solve X. So I talk to people and say, what's the thing that keeps you awake at night?
What are some of the things that you remember about that first seminar that would stick out in your mind?
The very first thing that I remember, this was on the very first day, and I wrote it down, and it's been one of my mottos ever since that time, is that Jay said, it's more important to be interested than interesting. And everybody has a story. They want to tell you where they've been, who they've seen, what they've done, how much money they've made, and the toys that they have. And I think up to that point, I'd never read How to Win Friends and Influence People. Of course, I've read that several times since then. But the most important thing that you can do in sales, marketing, if you're a consultant, if you're an employee, if you're an independent contractor, if you're anybody, is to take a real interest in other people rather than run on with diarrhea of the mouth and basically tell them everything about you and your product and so on and so forth. Listening was the key. The second thing that I took out of the whole deal, and I formulated this over the past 12, 13 years, is that business is nothing more than two people coming together exchanging value for value. So, Michael, if you sell widgets and I need a widget, I come to you and let's say your widgets are $25. I give you $25 for your widget. You're happy because the $25 covers your cost of making and distributing the widget plus gives you a fair profit. And if the widget is good and serves me and makes my thingamajig run longer, I'm happy and everybody's happy. And so business is really nothing more than developing relationships. And I might get off on a little tangent here is that I sometimes chuckle when people say, well, I'm into internet marketing. The internet is nothing more than the best, cheapest, most effective way of communicating between people that the world has ever seen. You're still dealing with people. For you to make some money, what has to happen is that you have to deliver some value to an honest to goodness, real life, flesh and blood, breathing person on the other end, and the communication medium is just the internet. I chuckle when people say, well, I'm in internet marketing. That's like I say, well, I'm in newspaper marketing, yellow page marketing. I mean, marketing is marketing. The vehicle is just the vehicle. And the message is always more important than the messenger. And so what really impacted me about the whole J. Abraham training in my life for my story in marketing is that marketing is nothing more than building relationships. We all know how to build friendship relationships, but most people totally forget that process when it comes to building business relationships. Relationships start off the same way business relationships do. Just ask any teenage guy. If he's got his eye on a girl, he doesn't walk up to her the first time he sees her and says, hey, I'm not doing anything Saturday, should we get married? She'll say no. What he does is he says, well, let's go out for a cup of coffee, let's go to a movie, let's go to dinner, things of that nature, and progresses along. Same thing with marketing. That's why giving people information up front is so important. And moving them down the path and just keeping in touch with them. It's simple. It's not hard.
I think I remember your name from listening to the Protégé tapes. You were at the very first one?
I was at the very first one.
What were you doing back then?
When I first attended, actually, I was working for the Postal Service. And I went to his, kind of started up things, and within 6 months I had managed to quit babysitting computers for the post office and struck out on my own along the way. It's kind of funny because one of the things I'm sure if you've listened to from the early Protégé tapes, Jay would say, listen guys, armed with the information that you have right now, you know more than 90% of the businesses out there know. So me coming from a blue-collar background, I said, well, this is kind of interesting. I grabbed some of my friends who had businesses, tried out some of the techniques, and then lo and behold, they worked. Along the way, joined the Chamber of Commerce, sat down with the director, and this is a funny story. It was a new member orientation breakfast, and I was the only one who showed up. And so this poor director walked in, and I can see in his eyes like, oh, goodness, I'm this guy's captive audience, plus I got to buy breakfast. So he said, well, tell me what you do, and I just shared with him some of the successes I had and some of the principles that I learned. And he said, you know, I think our members could use some of this information. Could you put together a seminar for them? I'm of the mindset that you say yes first and figure out how to do it later. So I said, sure. And he said, well, tell you what, I'll show you exactly how to put this thing together so you're going to get the maximum number of people to attend. First of all, don't write a letter. Our members are way too busy to read. Come back to the office with me. We're going to go through the membership directory of about 500 people. We'll pick out about 100 100 that I think are good prospects for you, and just start calling those people on the phone, and you'll probably wind up with around 12 to 15 people. Kind of new to the world of business, but I'm no dummy realizing that to get in touch with 100 business owners by phone is going to take me one heck of a long time. So I just politely said thanks, but no thanks. I went back, drafted a 6-page sales letter, mailed it out to all 500 people, and 31 people showed up. It blew this guy away. He had never been able to get more than 15 people out to anything in his 5 years as a career. So that's kind of how I launched my seminar business. That thing kind of took on a life of its own.
Okay, so you went through Jay Abraham's training. You learned some of the techniques. You needed to get in front of some potential prospects. You found one guy who had a group of people. So you set up a simple joint venture, said, let's do a seminar for my members. You can educate them. Therefore, it would be the betterment of the entire group. He gave you the mailing list, right?
Yeah, he was the membership director.
Okay, he gave you the mailing list. And who paid for the mailing? You?
I did.
You paid for the mailing, and you got 30 what people to show up?
31 people to show up. I think it was 19 bucks each.
So let's talk about what happened at the seminar.
Sure. Now, you have to always also understand that was the first time I'd ever spoken in front of people in my entire adult career, other than speech class in high school. And I showed up with just kind of a variation of the 10 marketing mistakes, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And I just kind of ran through those things. The seminar itself was supposed to be an hour-long breakfast seminar, and I had my 10 little note cards with me, and I got through half of them in about 90 minutes, and I noticed people who had been in business probably longer than I'd been out of diapers taking fast and furious notes. I said, you know what, there's something to this. I mean, most of these people don't have any clue about things as simple as making sure that you capture the name and address of anybody who does business with you and following up with them. This was back in 1990 before the internet was popular. It was basically just capture everybody's name and address and send them a mailing or a letter or a postcard once in a while.
These people were mesmerized like you were at Jay Abraham's material, right?
Oh, absolutely. They were just taking notes, and I just kind of looked at this stuff because I had absorbed it so much it was second nature, like breathing to me. But they were writing this stuff down. Long story short is I took something like $16,000 worth of business off of that one seminar.
Well, can you remember back then, out of those 30 clients after the seminar, what occurred? Do you remember?
There were probably half a dozen who stayed afterwards just to pick my brain and ask me, you know, how would you apply this to my particular business? Here's my catalog. Here's my space ads. Here's my Yellow Page ads. What would you do to improve this, to enhance it, to increase the response from it, things of that nature? Would you come out to my office and talk to me? I think we've got some ways where we can utilize your expertise, things of that nature.
Okay, and what'd you do?
I basically took on consulting clients. I did things as simple as take a person who had a service business, auto repair, and told them to start to put together a newsletter, ink and paper newsletter, to send out to their clients on a quarterly basis. And in this newsletter were little articles on different things that you can do to make your car go to 200,000 miles or whatever. Little things you can do in the winter to ensure your safety. And then, of course, the back page would be some coupons and different specials that were going on.
Did you just take on anyone, or did you look for setups, what Jay taught you?
I looked for setups. I had found out very early in my career when I was still working on basically word of mouth that I was young, I was idealistic, I had the Messiah complex, Michael, which means I can solve anybody's problem. And I found out very quickly that I'm not the Messiah. I can't solve everybody's problem. There were some people who came to me with products that basically the public did not want. And there's nothing on earth I can do to sell something that there's no demand for.
Did you take them as a client or just say, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do for you?
I took that kind of a client on once, and then I learned my lesson.
What is a setup, in your opinion?
A setup is a business that already has been in business for a while. They have a group of customers, people who have purchased something from them, which shows me that they're producing a product or service that people actually want, but they're either not following up with them, or they're using very inefficient lead generating or sales conversion tactics in the beginning. It's kind of like Jay says, they're succeeding somewhat in spite of themselves. That's what a setup is. Something where I can go in and for the same amount of effort that it might take me to increase one company's sales by 10%, I can increase this company's sales by 50, 70, 100%, 200%. That's my idea of a setup.
So after the meeting, you've got people who talk to you, they say they're interested in learning more and they want to do something with you. How did you set the appointment? Did you charge money for the appointment? What offer did you make to the client when you took them as a client? Did they have to put money down? Did you do it all on 100% contingency? Did you sign contracts? Did you have a simple letter of intent? Go through the structure, the details of what you did with the prospect to have that first meeting any kind of papers that were signed, and the details on setting the deal in motion.
Sure, absolutely. Back then, again, I was a little bit naive. I was just starting. There were times when I worked with contracts. There were times when I worked just on a handshake deal. The big thing that I found about contracts is that contracts only keep honest people honest. And if it's somebody that you have a gut feeling that you really trust them, I've had ironclad contracts with people that they refused to pay me on, and I've had handshake deals with people where they paid me very well. What I would do initially is if someone came up to me and said, hey, John, that was interesting what you shared this morning. I think that there are some things that you can do for our company. Can we meet? I'd say, absolutely. Let me come out to your office, spend a couple hours with you. And one thing I do even to this very day is I don't charge people up front to find out about their business and to find out if there is a match here. Simply because I guess I take the pay for performance concept to the extreme. I don't think anybody should earn a dollar unless they return multiples of that dollar. Nobody gets paid to breathe and nobody gets paid for effort. And the second thing is I want to find out as much as I can about that company to see if in fact if it's a setup or if it's going to be something very, very difficult to work with. So I would set up a time, go out to the company, and I would just ask them a ton of questions. I would ask them to walk me through their lead generation process. How do they get people in the front door to begin with, either to walk in or to call? When that person comes in, what do they do with them? What's their sales conversion process like? What do they do with the people that they don't sell?
Would they open up to you?
9 times out of 10, absolutely. They'd open up pretty much anything I wanted to ask for. Financial records, the books, the whole works. Because you have to understand, these were people who realized that there was something missing in their business. They knew instinctively that they should be at a different level than they were at. So they saw me as the doctor who comes in and says, listen, I could probably fix your problem, but you're going to have to let me poke and prod for a while to find out exactly what's wrong. And then after asking all these questions, I would just come down to the end, and one of two things happened. Either I knew that this was a setup, or I knew it wasn't a setup. If it wasn't a setup, I just shook hands and parted friends. If it was, I said, okay, here's the deal. I can see one or two or three or four areas in your sales process that can very easily be enhanced. Now, if you want me to work with you, I'm not going to actually do the physical implementation work, writing the sales letters, things of that nature, but I'll do the whole process. If you want me to do that, then what I'm going to ask for is a certain percentage of the increased sales over and above what your baseline is and what you have historically been growing by. So if you've historically been growing by, for example, 10% per year, we're going to base anything over that as the increase that I bring. Fair enough? 9 times out of 10, they say absolutely.
So you established that price right there in that meeting or the next meeting.
Right. And then usually I would also say what we're going to do is I'm going to ask for X number of thousands of dollars up front just as kind of a retainer against commission.
You would ask for that?
Absolutely, because, again, I found out some of this stuff early, that if both parties don't have a stake in making something happen, what happens is the party that has no stake in it oftentimes takes advantage of the party that does.
Right, so you'd ask for a couple thousand. Elmeth is a retainer for them to retain you if they're interested in moving forward.
Right, just to show that they were serious. Anything from $2,000 up to $10,000.
Okay, so it separated the men from the boys.
Yeah, I wanted to find out, were they serious about doing this, or did they just want to play me along and get some free advice?
Now, percentage-wise, out of all the people you made this offer to, how many of them bogged at the deposit?
I would say, gosh, back in those days, it was probably 50-50.
Okay, 50%, that's realistic.
Yeah, it's a number game.
All right, so then you moved forward and implemented these marketing strategies that you learned from Jay Abraham. Tell me about your most memorable deal.
My most memorable deal, probably the one that is the most funny, is not the one that either made me the most money or even increased overall the most, but it was funny because of the situation. Little mom-and-pop type meat-to-deli shop. They sold meat and deli stuff, plus they did wild game processing in the fall. Back in Minnesota, there's tons of deer hunters, so everybody would bring in their wild game. And worked with them. First thing I did is I taught them really how to write ads that were Jake-style ads. All the competitors that were running the ads with a little caricature of the butcher showing some meat or something, and then they'd have coupons at the bottom. And we wrote ads that were more advertorial type ads. I think I can still remember some of the headlines, like the three most important things that most of our competitors hope you'll never find out about the meat, of that nature. And there were a couple of interesting times. They would run those kind of ads, and the newspaper, first of all, would say, you've got to let us design your ads for you. These things are just not working. They were working like crazy. easy. We were laughing all the way to the bank. One time, unfortunately, we just didn't have enough lead time to put in that style of an ad. So we let the newspaper put in their kind of ad, and they ran the traditional kind of ad. And the response to the ad, because all the ads that we put in had a coupon, so we knew that when someone came in from the ad, we could track it. And the response to the newspaper style generic type ad was something like 3 or 5% of what we were getting from our kind of ads. And also during wild game processing season, we wrote an ad that I'm sure you're going to remember from Gary Halbert's stuff. In fact, I think it's the one that he has in his book, How to Make Maximum Money in Minimum Time with the Chiropractor Yellow Page app. We wrote an ad like that. Don't have your wild game processed anywhere until you read this. Most wild game processors only understand a couple techniques. We understand another, so on and so forth. We put this ad in a publication called The Outdoor News, which goes to all the hunting enthusiasts. And this ad was so successful that this little company started doing over 500% the amount of business that their well-established competitor was doing, and it infuriated the competition so much that the competition started phone calls to the Department of Public Safety about this meat market. And they were just doing anything. I'm not sure if it's Department of Public Safety, but whatever government department is responsible for visiting places where food is prepared. And so the inspectors would be coming out to my client almost every day and say, well, we're getting this anonymous call. We've got to check out to make sure everything is clean and sanitized. They're running according to regulations. And it became kind of a game after a while, because if they received a call, they had to come. But they'd come in and say, you know, somebody must be really upset with you. And my clients would say, well, we know who it is. It's the competition, because we're just trouncing them. And all the competitors called the newspaper, in fact, and said, if you ever run this company's ad again, we're going to pull our ads. That was probably my most memorable case. Again, it wasn't the one that made me the most money or made my client millions and millions of dollars, but I think it stands as a testament to how effective.
When you're dealing with these clients of yours, thinking back on all the clients you've had, actually working with them, are you working on a one-on-one basis with the owner or with the marketing director? And what kind of challenges do you face, especially if the owner says, okay, we're going to do the deal, and he turns you over to some employee who's handling the marketing? Can you go into that?
I think I was probably fortunate and or selective enough never to get into a situation where I was really butting heads with somebody. Say, for example, I think what you may be talking about is going in and working with an existing marketing manager who might, for whatever reasons, have their own pride at stake or say, well, this idea didn't come from me, it can't be good. Is that what you're talking about?
If anyone's going to become a marketing consultant, obviously they may steal a deal with a company, and you have a principal who may make all the decisions but may not actually handle the marketing. So since you've made an agreement with the owner, let's say the owner turns you off to some employee who's not real savvy on marketing, doesn't know what they're doing, doesn't even know why you're there. Are there any challenges that you can remember where this happened, where it became very difficult to continue on with your marketing agreement because you were not directly involved with the decision maker?
I never had those, and I think probably it was just that either, like I said, maybe I was lucky enough, or maybe I was selective enough that I didn't get into a situation where I was dealing with one person to close the deal, and then they handed me off to another person who was either not in the loop the first time around or who was not the most cooperative. My clients were always very cooperative.
Okay, that's great. So this whole J. Abraham protege educated you enough to be pretty dangerous, huh?
Well, listen, it took me from a guy who was babysitting computers at the post office to somebody who, to this day, is a very well-respected marketing strategist and consultant and coach.
Okay, that's great. Obviously, you know, I buy and resell the J. Abraham material and a student of it. And so people who visit my site who buy this, I think this will be really helpful to someone who actually implements and studies the tapes and wants to get out there and do some marketing consultant to hear it from an actual original first-time J. Abraham protege. That's wonderful.
I was at the very first one, the very pilot program, actually.
Was it amazing?
It was eye-opening to me. I was at three of the programs during that first year that he did those.
What do you know about Mack Ross? Pretty sharp guy. Do you remember his background?
Mack Ross, I remember that he was very heavily involved with Phillips Publishing, and he may be to this day, I'm not sure. But he obviously knew a ton about direct mail. Mack's a good guy, one of the best.
Yeah, and Jim Cecil, I really liked him, too.
I remember Jim Cecil. Jim Cecil, of course, kind of made a name for himself as the slug doctor.
Do you know if he's still around today?
You know, I haven't heard what Jim Cecil is up to. He obviously is more geared towards the sales end of things and training sales forces and the whole sales conversion process, which is an inherent part of marketing. marketing, but the part that I was most jazzed about or most interested in.
Do you remember Gary Halbert being at that seminar at all?
He was not at the seminar. They played a videotape of him in lieu of him being there. I think he had a schedule conflict or something of that nature.
Could you think of anything that you'd rather be doing to make a living than this?
No, absolutely not. I don't work. I help people. Everybody in business has some sort of problem, some sort of challenge to keep them awake at night where they say, if only I could solve X. So I talk to people and say, what's the thing that keeps you awake at night? Or is your business humming along just fine like a well-oiled machine? You're selling all the products you can make. You've got no problem. And maybe that was the case 2 or 3 years ago, but in the current economy, everybody's got some sort of challenge. And so what I do now is I say, well, tell me about your biggest challenge. I can't guarantee that I can solve it, but if I can't, at least I'm not going to charge you anything. And if I can solve it, it's going to be a percentage either of the additional money that I help you make or the costs that I can help you save.
Here's another bonus tip from Michael Sinoff, HardToFindSeminars.com. And it's a collection of recordings on marketing consulting. I have 12 hours of audio interviews all on the subject of marketing consulting. We also have downloads to over 23 reports on the subject of marketing. In the section of recordings, you will find a multitude of ideas that will give you very valuable ideas on how to build and grow your business and also how to teach others how to grow their business with simple, no-cost, low-cost techniques. If you go back to hardtofindseminars.com to the main page, you'll see across the top in white consulting services. If you click on that page, there's a form that will take you into a private secret section of my site I've set up just for you with all these recordings. All you have to do is fill out your name and your information and you'll be whisked away to Consulting Secrets, where we have thousands of dollars worth of free downloadable audio recordings in MP3 and Flash, also the written printed transcripts in PDF that you can start learning from starting today. This information is hot, so get on over to hardtofindseminars.com, check out Consulting Secrets.